Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. You know, folks, we live in a great country, yet we must have faith and trust in our government or we cannot succeed. On the other hand, the government must also believe in its own people. Both factions must tell the truth. For this reason, the JFK assassination still matters today. History cannot be replayed, but it can be rewritten. Why read another book about the JFK assassination or listen to another podcast? It's actually very simple. The major crime of the 20th century remains unsolved. And what our history books tells us that happened that day in Dallas is not what really happened. If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon, and it's on sale. Or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Something has happened in the motorcade route. There's numerous people running up the hill alongside Elm Street, there by the Simmons Freeway. Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
This just in from Dallas, Homicide Chief Captain Will Fritz said today the assassination case against Lee Harvey Oswald is cinched. He said flatly, "This is the man that killed President Kennedy, 24-year-old Lee Harvey Oswald."
No, they're taking me in because of the fact that I live in Missouri. I'm just a patsy. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's the man with a gun.
Bill Newman.
Billy, tell me what you saw and what you felt. What happened to you?
We just come from the left field after seeing the president and the first lady, and we were just in front of the triple underpass on Elm Street, and we're at the edge of the curve, getting ready to wave at the president.
So you were down under the viaduct, so to speak, weren't you?
Well, we were halfway in between the,
on the grass,
triple underpass. We were at the curve when the incident happened. But the president's car was some 50 feet still yet in front of us coming towards us, and we heard the first shot, and the president, I don't know who was hit first, but the president jumped up in his seat. And then as the car got directly in front of us, well, a gunshot apparently from behind us hit the president inside side of the temple.
Do you think the first gunshot came from behind you, too?
I think it came from the same location. Apparently back up on the mall, what you call it.
You should think the shot came from up on top of the viaduct toward the president, is that correct?
Yes, sir. Not on the viaduct itself, but up on top of the hill, a little mound of ground near the garden.
The 1967 documentary Rush to Judgment is a simple, concise legal argument that the Warren Commission was hiding something, suggesting a broader conspiracy. Lee Harvey Oswald could not have single-handedly killed President John F. Kennedy. Director Emilio D'Antonio and lawyer Mark Lane recorded unpolished first-hand interviews from witnesses with direct proximity to the murders, but many of whom were not given a platform in the official inquiry, the Warren Commission. For a subject that has been rehashed and sensationalized so many times during the intervening 60 years, this documentary brings fresh clarity and presents a cool-headed argument that is untouched by time. In the documentary, Lane travels to Dallas to interview witnesses, friends of Oswald's, and other people connected with the assassination. archival footage of the immediate aftermath, an FBI recreation, and visits to the scene of the crime are used to argue that the Warren Commission's report is fundamentally flawed. In this documentary, you will hear from what many researchers, including myself, believe was one of the most important witnesses to the events that awful day in Dallas, Lee Bowers. At the moment of the assassination, Bowers was operating the Union Terminals Company two-story interlocking tower overlooking the parking lot around 120 yards north of the grassy knoll and west of the Texas School Book Depository. He had an unobstructed view of the rear of the concrete pergola and a stockade fence atop of the grassy knoll. He described hearing three shots that came from either the depository on his left or near the mouth of the Triple Underpass Railroad Bridge on his right. He was unsure because of the echo from the shots.
Mr. Bowers, where were you employed on November 22nd, 1963?
At that time, I was employed as a tower operator for the Union Terminal Company.
And where were you at about 12:30 that day?
I was at the south end of the terminal of the tower building, looking down toward the terminal and observing the motorcade, as was everyone else in the area.
Could you tell us what you heard and what you saw from about 12 noon until the time that the shots were fired?
Well, for some time that morning, since perhaps 10 o'clock in the morning, we had the area pretty well sealed off, and the policemen had been stationed on the Triple Underpass as well as other strategic corners in the area, so that there was very little traffic moving into this area at this time. This is a dead-end area, which is used primarily for parking. After 11 or 11:30, there was practically no movement in the area whatsoever. However, about 12:10, give or take 5 minutes, there was a car which entered the area and probed around for some time. This car was a 59 Oldsmobile station wagon with a out-of-state license. It was muddy, as if it had just come in off of the road from some area where it was a red, sandy area. It was occupied by one male who spent 3 or 4 minutes in the area looking it over, and then, as he found out, left by the entrance, which is the only way in and out of the area at that time. Not too long after that, perhaps 5 or 6 minutes, a car of a totally different description, also occupied by one male, entered the area. Now, this man performed a similar action, and he toured down around the area probing to examine the exits, and seemed at one or more occasions to have a mic or something resembling such an instrument up to his face. Just a few moments after that, the third car came into the area, and these were the only three cars that entered this area during this specific period. The third car was a 61 or 2 Chevrolet. This car was muddy all the way up to the windows, as if it had just come in off the road. It had an out-of-state license of the identical to the first car of the series. And it also had political stickers on it, which were not only for the same candidate, but were identical in nature and color, so that they appeared to have been from the same group. This car was occupied by one male who spent a little bit more time in the area than the others, and probed down by the side of the tower where I was located. I could not state that these cars left the area entirely, because after they got back onto the extension of Elm Street in front of the school depository building, they were lost to my vision, so that they could have remained very close by. Immediately after the shots were fired, there, of course, was a mass confusion, to put it mildly. But the area was immediately sealed off by, I would say, at least 50 police within 3 to 5 minutes. The first one to appear on the scene, other than those, of course, who were standing around, including two on top of the Triple Underpass, was one who rode a motorcycle up the incline coming up from the lower portion of Elm Street, and he rode perhaps two-thirds of the way up or more before he deserted his motorcycle. At the time of the shooting, in the vicinity of where the two men I've described were, there was a flash of light, or there was something which occurred which caught my eye in this immediate area on the embankment. Now, what this was, I could not state at that time, and at this time, I could not identify it other than there was some unusual occurrence, a flash of light or smoke or something, which caused me to feel like something out of the ordinary had occurred there.
In reading your testimony, Mr. Bowers, it appears that just as you were about to make that statement, you were interrupted in the middle of the sentence by the commission counsel, who then went into another area.
That's correct. I was there only to tell them what they asked, and so that when they seemed to want to cut off the conversation, I felt like that was, as far as I was concerned, that was the end of it.
Mr. Bowers, how many shots did you hear?
There were three shots, and these were spaced with one shot, then a pause, and then two shots in very close order, such as perhaps almost on top of each other, while there was some pause between the first and the second shots.
Did you tell that to the Dallas police?
Yes, I told this to the police, and then also told it to the FBI, and also I had a discussion two or three days later with them concerning this, and they made no comment other than the fact that when I stated I felt like the second and third shots could not have been fired from the same rifle, they reminded me that I wasn't an expert, and I had to agree.
On November 22, 1963, Sam Skinny Holland watched the motorcade of President John Kennedy from the overpass bridge in Dealey Plaza. He said that when Kennedy was shot, he saw a puff of gun smoke underneath the branches of the trees on the grassy knoll. Here's what Holland told Mark Lane back in 1967.
Mr. Holland, on November 22nd, where were you?
November the 22nd, I was standing on top of the Triple Underpass, waiting for the parade in the president's car. I arrived about 11:45, or close to noon. Two policemen was talking to me and asked me, one of them asked me if I would come back up there and identify the people that had any business or had a right to be up there.
They would be the railroad employees?
They'd be railroad employees, and I told him I would.
And what was your position with the railroad company?
Track and signal supervisor for the Union Terminal Railroad. I've put in 41 years of railroad service in the signal department.
Did you look in any particular direction when you heard the shots?
Yes, I looked over to where I thought the shot came from, and I saw a puff of smoke still lingering underneath the trees in front of the wooden fence. The report sounded like it came from behind the wooden fence, and a policeman threw his motorcycle down in the middle of the street and run up the embankment with his pistol drawn. He was running toward that particular spot, and also another motorcycle policeman right behind him tried to ride up the embankment on his motorcycle, and it turned over about halfway up the embankment. And he got out, got off his motorcycle, and left it laying there and run on over to the fence with his gun in his hand.
Where do you think the shots came from?
Well, I know where that third shot came from.
Where did that shot come from?
Behind the picket fence.
Is there any...
Close to the little plaza.
Is there any doubt in your mind that that shot came from behind the
There's no doubt in my mind. There's no doubt whatsoever in my mind in the statement that I made in the sheriff's office immediately after the shooting, and the statement that I made to the Warren Commission. And I made it very plain there was no doubt in my mind what there was definitely a shot fired behind that picket fence. I made it plain to the Warren Commission, and I made the same statement in the sheriff's office. There was a fourth shot.
On November 22nd, Mr. Holland, did you tell the sheriff's office in an affidavit you signed that day that you saw a puff of smoke come from behind the picket fence?
I am certain I did.
Was it the general feeling, would you say, Mr. Holland, among the police officers and others at the moment that the shots were fired, that at least one shot came from behind that wooden fence?
There's about six of eight of us boys from the Union Terminal run around there to find some evidence that there was someone around there. Certainly the ones that was with me that run around that fence realized what was happening. They told me the same thing that I told you, that there was definitely a shot fired, and they saw the smoke. We just all started running around that fence as a unit.
Richard Dodd and James Simmons were also Union Terminal Railroad employees that was up on the overpass bridge with Sam Holland. Listen to what they told Lane they saw that day.
Where were you on November 22nd, Mr. Dodd?
I was standing on the underpass, Commerce Underpass in Dallas, Texas.
Were you there alone?
No, I was along with three friends of mine.
Railroad men?
Yeah, all railroad men.
Mr. Holland was one of them.
That's right.
And did you see anything which might indicate to you where the shots came from?
Well, we all three seen, four seen about the same thing as the shot. The smoke came from behind the hedge on the north side of the plaza, and a motorcycle policeman dropped his motorcycle in the street with his gun in his hand and run up the embankment to the hedge. And then I went north to look around the corner to see if there's anyone behind the hedge and met special agent at Katy Railroad. And he went down there and I walked along with him to see if there were any tracks there, in which there were tracks and cigarette butts were laying where someone had been standing on a bumper, looking over the fence or something.
Were you questioned by agents of any government agency on November 22nd, Mr. Dodd?
Yes, we were. We were taken over to the courthouse and questioned by, I suppose, Secret Service men of some kind. And asked me quite a few questions about the same as I've told you men here today.
But you were never called as a witness by the Warren?
No, I never was called.
Because here's the Warren report, and in the index your name is not listed, and there's no reference in the whole 888 pages to the fact that you were up there and you saw what you saw, you heard what you heard.
Well, I don't know about that. There was something that looks to me like that going on there that somebody should have found out something. A man walk up and shoot a man handcuffed to a couple of policemen and get away with it. Why, I figured there's something else that's going on besides what it should be.
We are in Mesquite, Texas, in the home of James Leon Simmons, a car inspector for the Union Terminal Railroad. Mr. Simmons, how long have you been employed by the Union Terminal?
I've been employed by the Union Terminal 11 years.
Were you a witness to the assassination of President Kennedy?
Yes, I was standing on the Elm Street overpass at the time of the assassination.
Were you there alone or with others?
There was a group of employees from the Union Terminal at the time and two Dallas policemen.
What did you see and what did you hear?
As the presidential limousine was rounding the curve on Elm Street, there was a loud explosion. At the time, I didn't know what it was, but it sounded like a loud firecracker or a gunshot, and it sounded like it came from the left and in front of us towards the wooden fence. And there was a puff of smoke that came underneath the trees on the embankment.
Where was the puff of smoke, Mr. Simmons, in relation to the wooden fence?
It was right directly in front of the wooden fence.
After you heard the shot and saw the smoke, what did you do?
I was talking with a patrolman, Foster, at the time, and as soon as we heard the shots, we ran around to the wooden fence. And when we got there, there was no one there, but there was footprints in the mud around the fence, and there was footprints on the wooden two-by-four railing on the fence.
Were you questioned by the Dallas police on that day?
Yes, I was.
Did you give your name to the Dallas police?
Yes, I did.
Did you tell them what you just told me?
Yes, I did.
Were you subsequently questioned by agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation?
About a month later, I was questioned by the FBI.
Did you tell them what you told me and what you told the Dallas police?
Yes, I did.
Were you ever called as a witness by the Warren Commission?
No, sir, I wasn't.
This is the Warren Commission report. Back of it has an index of every person who is referred to by the commission. Is your name present there?
No, sir, it isn't.
I think it's rather curious that you had such a fine view of the whole Dealey Plaza area, and you were among those who saw smoke coming from evidently behind the fence, and yet you were not called by the commission as a witness.
Well, I always found it peculiar, but I thought that's the way they did business.
Some of the assassination witnesses who present their observation on camera to Mark Lane include the man who forced the Warren Commission to develop the single bullet theory. James Tague. Tague received a minor wound to his right cheek caused by tiny pieces of concrete debris from a street curb that was struck by fragments from a bullet that was fired at Kennedy. Besides Kennedy and Texas Governor John Conley, Tague was the only person known to have been struck as a result of gunfire at Dallas's Dealey Plaza that day.
There was a motorcycle policeman that just stopped his motorcycle up by the monument and had drawn his revolver and was racing up the hill to the left of him. There was a deputy sheriff, which I think was stationed under the underpass, Buddy Walters, at this time. And I says, you know, I felt something sting me on the face as I was standing down there. I said, just sting. And Walters looked at me and says, yes, says, you got blood on your cheek. He says, where were you standing? I says, well, down by the underpass. So we started walking down there. And when Walters got about, oh, I'd say 10 feet away, he says, look there on the curb. There was a very visible mark on the curb where a bullet had struck. Either a fragment of the bullet or a piece of the concrete. It flew up and scratched my face. And he said, go to the city police headquarters and make a statement, which I did.
Mr. Tague, this is a picture of Dealey Plaza, as you know. I wonder if you'd be good enough to show me where you were standing when you heard the shots.
I was standing at the east end of the triple underpass between Commerce and Main. There's a little concrete divider there. It's about 3 feet wide.
And, sir, could you indicate where the bullet struck the concrete curb?
The bullet struck the curb on the south curb of Main Street. It would be right here.
And at the time that you first heard the shots, what was your impression as to the origin of those shots?
My first impression was that they had come from the left of me.
Would you indicate on the picture where that would be?
Up in this area here towards the hill.
Where in relation to that wooden fence?
Well, somewhere towards the wooden fence.
Mr. Tague, on the 22nd, when the shots were being fired, your first impression was that they came from the area near the wooden fence.
That's correct.
Where do you now think that the shots came from?
I believe that they did come from the school book depository because of the things I've read about, the evidence which has been brought forth in the newspapers and through the Warren Report and so on.
Orville Nix was not only a witness to the assassination, but he filmed it also. His filming of the shooting, which only captured the last few seconds of it, but shows the grassy knoll in its entirety, is considered to be nearly as important as the film by Abraham Zapruder.
Mr. Nix, where were you on November 22nd, 1963?
Standing on the corner of Main and Houston.
And did you take any pictures of the presidential limousine as it went through Dealey Plaza?
Yes, I've taken pictures before and after, before the assassination and during the assassination.
And you know, of course, that your pictures were eventually used by the government to determine where the limousine was when some of the shots were fired.
Yes.
Did you deliver a copy of your film to the federal government?
Yes, I delivered a copy of my film to the federal government about December the 1st.
About a little over a week after the assassination.
Yes, my film got lost in the processing plant.
Where is the original film?
The original film belonged to United Press International. The government has a duplicate copy.
And where is that duplicate copy?
In the archives.
And is that the duplicate copy which was used by the Warren Commission for the purpose of determining, along with other films, the Muchmore film and the Zapruder film, where the presidential limousine was when some of the shots were fired?
I would say so.
Well, you now have a copy of your film, which you were kind enough to show to us this afternoon. Is that copy the same as the original which you gave to the FBI on December 1st?
I would say no. There is some films maybe missing, some frames. Some of the frames were ruined.
Does the film which you have at the present time have the same number of frames as the film which you delivered to the FBI on December 1st?
I would say no, but it's cause of losing maybe a frame here and there.
At the time the shots were fired, did you look at the book depository building?
No.
Did you think at that time that the shots came from the book depository building?
No, I thought it came from a fence between the book depository and the railroad track.
Does anyone else who you know or who you've spoken with also believe that the shots came from there?
Most everyone thought it came from the fence behind the book depository.
Did you have occasion to speak with Forrest Sorrells, who was, of course, a friend of yours, and the Secret Service agent in charge of Dallas that day?
Yes, I did.
Did he tell you where he thought the shots came from?
He thought they were coming from the same place.
Which is?
Behind the fence.
At the present time, where do you believe the shots came from?
Well, they came from the book depository because there's proof that it did come from there.
I see. This you've read in newspapers and you've read the report.
Yes.
J.C. Price was a maintenance engineer in charge of the Terminal Annex building in Dealey Plaza. He viewed the assassination from the roof of his building and had probably the best view of it. In spite of this, he was never called to give testimony to the Warren Commission and its conclusion that three shots were fired from the Texas School Book Depository building, which was in conflict with what J.C. Price saw with his own two eyes that day. This is his 1967 interview with Mark Lane.
We are in the basement of the Terminal Annex building, northeast corner of Dealey Plaza. We are here with Mr. J.C. Price, the engineer in charge of the building. Mr. Price, where were you at the time that the presidential motorcade drove through Dealey Plaza?
Well, I went up to the roof and where I'd get a better view of the cabin.
Is this where you were sitting on November 22nd, Mr. Price?
Yes, sir.
Right here?
Right here on this spot.
And where did you think you heard the shots come from?
From behind the overpass over there, triple overpass. That's where I thought the shots were coming from.
And where did you see the man run?
Over behind that wooden fence, past the cars, and over behind the Texas Depository building.
Did you give that information to the Dallas Sheriff's Department on the very day of the assassination?
Yes, I did. I'd say in about 30 minutes after the assassination.
Were you ever called as a witness by the Warren Commission?
No, sir. No, sir.
I show you this map published by the Warren Commission of the Dealey Plaza area and ask you if you would mark on it where you thought the shots came from.
Yes, sir.
That's just behind the wooden fence where it joins the overpass. Is that correct?
That is correct.
We're now here more than 2 years after the assassination. Now, where do you think the shots came from on November 22nd?
Well, I can't be sure. It seems that from all information that's been gathered that the shots came from the Texas Book Depository, but I can't hardly believe that. But really, I think the shots came from that direction. Seems that everything pointed to that fact that they came from the Book Depository building, but I can't buy that right now.
Charles Brenham and his 5-year-old son, Joe, were standing in the Dealey Plaza North Infield grass, a few feet south of the south curve of Elm Street. They were across the street from Abraham Zapruder and the Dealey Plaza grassy knoll. Both Brenham and Joe can be clearly seen in the Zapruder film. They were some of the closest witnesses to the president at the time of the shooting, with the exception of those in the car with Kennedy.
Mr. Brim, where were you on November 22nd, 1963?
I had taken my 5-year-old son downtown to see the presidential parade. I would say that he was possibly 30 feet away when the first bullet struck, moved a little closer, and was possibly 20 to 25 feet away when the second bullet hit.
Did you see the effect of the bullets upon the president?
When the second bullet hit, there was hair seemed to go flying. It was very definite then that he was struck in the head with the second bullet. And, yes, sir, I very definitely saw effects of the second bullet.
Did you see any particles of the president's skull fly when the bullet struck him in the head?
I saw a piece fly in the area of the curb where I was standing.
And in which direction did that fly?
It seemed to have come left and back.
In other words, the skull particle flew to the left and to the rear of the presidential limousine.
Sir, whatever it was that I saw did fall both in that direction and over into the curb there.
You were a ranger during the war, correct?
Yes, sir, I was a ranger during the war. Took part in the invasion of France and was shot a couple of times. So, as I say, it's possibly like swimming. I hadn't heard that sound for many a year, but you don't forget it once you've heard a shot rounding, coming close to you.
Did you speak with newsmen on November 22nd and tell them what you saw?
Yes, sir, and told them simply that their two shots had hit the president and the direction that I had thought the bullets had come from.
Did you at any time that day make a statement which was televised?
Yes, sir. Fortunately, I was probably 15 to 20 feet away from the president when it happened.
Tell us exactly what you saw, sir.
He was coming down the street, and my five-year-old boy and myself were by ourselves on the grass there on Commerce Street, and I asked Joe to wave to him, and Joe waved, and I waved, and the man,
that's all right, sir.
You were ready, because he was waving back. He was, the shot rang out, and he slumped down in the seat, and his wife reached up toward him, and he was slumping down, and the second shot went off, and it just knocked him down from the seat. I'm positive that it hit him. I hope it didn't, but I'm positive that it hit him, and he went all the way down in the car. Then they speeded up, and I didn't know what was going on, so I just grabbed the boy and fell on him in hopes that there wasn't a maniac around. I can't help you more, but I won't forget it.
Were you among the closest witnesses to the limousine when the shot struck the president?
Yes, sir. I would have to say that if not the closest, one of the closest to the unfortunate incident, I did get a view of something I'll never forget.
Were you called as a witness by the Warren Commission?
No, I was not called by the Warren Commission to testify.
In effect, Mr. Holland, the Warren Commission published just a very small portion of your testimony and used your testimony as proof that no shots could have come from behind the fence. Did they accurately and fairly use your testimony?
They are wrong, because my testimony, and I made it very clear, that there was a fourth shot fired, and one of those shots came from behind that picket fence. And there's no doubt in my mind, and never will be, because I was on the spot. I saw the smoke, heard the report, and saw the smoke from behind that fence. And I don't see how that they could doubt there was a fourth shot fired.
The vast majority of the witnesses who expressed an opinion as to the origin of the shots agreed with Mr. Holland that the shot did come from behind the fence. These witnesses were positioned throughout Dealey Plaza. The commission concluded that no credible evidence suggests that the shots were fired from any place other than the Texas School Book Depository building. Mr. Holland, you were on the overpass. You were probably in the best position of any witness on November 22nd. In your view, did the Warren Commission present all of the facts regarding the assassination of President Kennedy?
Well, let me say this. The Warren Commission, I think, had to report in their book what they wanted the world to believe when they read the Warren Commission. As you know, as well as I know, that everybody in the world was reading this Warren Commission, and it had to read like they wanted it to read. They had to prove that Oswald did it alone.
I want you to understand something here. These are first-hand, boots-on-the-ground interviews with people who were there in the plaza the day of the assassination, the moment of the assassination. These are not people that were trying to get famous by telling their story. None of them were paid a dime for participating in this documentary. These are everyday, wholesome Americans who just wanted the truth to come out. There is no way that you can listen to these witness statements and not have doubts about what the Warren Commission told us in their report. What really bothers me is that all these witnesses that you heard from today are now dead. they did not live to see the real truth come out about the JFK assassination. I sure hope I do. Next week on The End of Innocence, the JFK assassination, we will listen to our third and final part of Mark Lane's 1967 documentary, Rush to Judgment. We will hear from a couple more witnesses who were very near the president when he was shot. One of these witnesses, some researchers believe, captured the real assassin of President Kennedy in a photograph she took. We will also hear from a woman who witnessed the J.D. Tippit shooting. Her story is fascinating. We'll see you next week.